reaches out, out to second, caught by Iglesias, double play, inning over. Two on, nobody out. He gets Harper to strike out, and Castellanos to Iglesias to Lindor to the bottom of the sixth, and the Mets lead it 2-0 in Game 3 on FS1.
It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Monday, December the 23rd, 2024. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You can get me on X at Talking Mets, no G, and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com, no G, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You get me on Instagram, TalkingMetsNoG, and I'd love for you to subscribe to the newsletter, Substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And I want to thank the good folks on the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. Happy holidays, Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, everybody. Couple of days here before Christmas, and I come to you here on this early Monday morning. And what a fortuitous decision, and as I always say, as we do these shows, and I love doing the shows on Sunday, especially during the season as we look back at the week and look ahead to the week. In the off season with the Hans stove, you just never know what comes down, how quickly a show goes stale. And as the day was getting late and first basemen were coming off the market, one of my thoughts was, you know, watch I go to bed and Pete Alonso signs either with the Mets or somebody else, and everything I do gets blown away. Let me wait till the morning. Not because I really believed something would happen in the middle of the night. I really thought the market would slow down, the free agent market with the holidays, because that's what's happened in prior years. And sure enough, at about 2 o'clock in the morning, the Mets and Sean Manaea announced a 3-year, $75 million deal. Mets continue to build out their rotation, maybe making it nearly complete. And I come to you this early Monday morning with some news. I was planning on talking about the rotation. And what was interesting is, and I'm not going to make this a really long show. I'm going to try to keep this somewhat brief. It's not going to be multiple segments and everything like that. But what's interesting is that I was talking about the 1999 Mets yesterday at the newsletter because of the passing of Ricky Henderson. And it's always sobering when players, I mean, Ricky was a young man. He was only 65 years old. Players that have been active in the last 20 years. I mean, I remember the 1999 season like it was yesterday. But what was interesting is I was reminiscing about the 1999 season. And if you go over the newsletter, it talks about Ricky's season there with the Mets and where it stands versus other leadoff hitters in Mets history. Free for all, it was one of those that wanted to put it out there. And hint, hint, I mean, Ricky's 1999 season at age 40 was pretty good. And I've done this before. As I was looking at that team and I was reminiscing about that season, I looked at that rotation and I said, boy, you know, if the Mets bring back Sean Manaea, there's a lot of similarities to maybe what they're doing. Maybe not on age, because that was a more aged rotation. A lot late 30s, mid to late 30s pitchers on that rotation. But when you look at Al Leiter and Earl Hershiser and Masato Yoshi and Rick Reed and Kenny Rogers and a little bit of Octavio Dotel sprinkled in there, and Bobby Jones was there at the beginning of the year, but Bobby Jones was hurt most of that year. It's not an impressive rotation, especially during the height of the offensive steroid era, especially for a team that came within a couple of games of the World Series, a team that had aspirations of winning a championship. And you start to look at what David Stearns is doing here with the 2025 Mets rotation. And before the signing of Sean Manaea, or the re-signing of Sean Manaea, I know none of you were really excited about Griffin Canning and the upside that he has. And if you go up and down, that's really what the Mets rotation is. They're taking a closer, turning him into a starter in Clay Holmes. Frankie Montas is a reclamation project who has started his ascent back to where he was when the Yankees acquired him, which was a mid to top of the rotation piece that the A's had. Kodai Senga has top of the rotation potential, showed it in 2023, was hurt with a shoulder injury, always a challenging thing. You don't know what you're going to get. And then you have David Peterson, who showed a lot of promise first season back after getting the hip fixed. And then it goes down to, okay, what are you going to get from a Tylor Megill? What are you going to get from a Paul Blackburn? Can Brandon Sproat and Blade Tidwell contribute like a Dotel did in 1999 at some point? I think Christian Scott, with the TJ surgery, he's pretty much done. I don't think you'll see him, but who knows later in the year? Who knows what the Mets and Scott, with the way that surgeries are evolving? I'm not penciling him in. And then there's Tylor Megill, you know, the girl with the curl. You know, what has he got? So there's a lot of interesting concepts in this rotation. But right now, after they signed what basically is the same deal that Nathan Eovaldi got, David Stearns has one, or at least close to certainty, and I put that an asterisk next to it, and that's Sean Manaea with his 3 years, $75 million deal, coming off a season where he was pretty much their de facto ace. You heard the clip. I mean, what better way, on a very, very cold day, a couple of days before Christmas, what better way to start your Monday than to hear a clip from the postseason? And a big, big out in the postseason with the double play on Nick Castellanos that Manaea put together. So Manaea, 180 innings, 12-6 record, 3.47 ERA, finished 11th in the Cy Young voting, a strikeout per inning, and away we go. It wasn't his best season of his career, but you know, in a lot of ways, it was his most complete season because he was able to go nearly, you know, pitch the most innings he's ever has, and he was able to produce tie or at least a career high in wins. But, you know, what can you get from Manaea going forward? And that's the real question over the next 3 years. Now, with the way that the pitching market has exploded, this is a good deal. I mean, it's only a couple of million less than what Max Fried got, but it's 5 years less. It's, you know, the big winner of this offseason from the pitching perspective was Blake Snell with his $36 million AAV. Obviously, a lot of that is deferred. And, I mean, you got guys like Luis Severino getting $22 million. Frankie Montas, as we all know, got $17 million. Matt Boyd hardly pitched last year, getting $14.5 million. I mean, look, Patrick Sandoval, another guy, hardly pitched, $9 million. You know, Shane Bieber, Tommy John surgery, $13 million. I know that there's a resume there. But pitching has gotten expensive, and as the Mets kind of go forward, and then you saw the Phillies give up a top five prospect for Jesus Luzardo, and I know, you know, that was a thing that was discussed over on X earlier in the day. Luzardo, a nice arm, but let's face it, made 12 starts, elbow problems, has command and control issues at any moment. He's a project. I mean, maybe the Phillies put it together, and then you get him with his 200 strikeouts and that kind of season he had in 23 with Miami. And then you have Wheeler, and you have Christopher Sanchez, and you have Ranger Suarez, and you have Luzardo, and Luzardo taking over for Taijuan Walker. I mean, that's huge. That makes the Phillies have arguably and the best rotation in the National League, maybe all of baseball. So the Mets have some competition on the pitching front, and they are going with more of what I would call a riverboat gambler philosophy here, or a riverboat gambler blueprint. Now, I'm not going to get into the rumors about Bregman and Alonso. This is not about Alonso and Bregman in the offense. But what I do know is this. If the Mets are done, with the exception of waiting out this Roki Sasaki situation, which is a whole other scenario, and we're not going to hear about that till mid to late January because of the international free agent signing. And Sasaki, as our buddy Jim Allen from the Japan Baseball Podcast talked about, he may not be a completely finished product either coming in. So even if you want to add Sasaki as that number six, and say, well, if they bring him in, this changes the dynamic. This is a rotation that, quite honestly, could be pretty good. I don't think it's Phillies good. I'm not sure if it's Yankees good. I'm not saying this is, vintage 2015 Mets good. Has potential to be pretty good. And, you know, depending on what they do with the bullpen, perhaps do what it did late in the year. Get the ball to the bullpen in the seventh inning. Minimize the outs to the bridge to the Diaz. You guys know what the blueprint is. As long as Diaz is the closer, and we all believe Diaz to be this dominant endgame pitcher, the goal is always going to be a quality start, minimize the bridge, try to keep it from, you know, it's about six outs out of the bridge to Diaz, and then you get those last three outs, and you feel really good about those last three outs because he's got the best stuff on the staff, and if you need to get three outs at any given time, and he's completely healthy and rested, that's the guy you're going to go to, start or otherwise. Maybe that's what this rotation can do, but I can tell you, and I've said this, and you want to be the paranoid Mets fan. This is a rotation that if it doesn't work out, if the lab that the Mets are touting and feel so good about doesn't work out, you could have some serious problems come May. Maybe Memorial Day. We could be in a similar, maybe not completely similar situation as the Mets were last year around Memorial Day where they were no man's land, but you could be in crisis mode in a different way where you have this great offense, you have Soto, you may have some of the young kids emerging, the positional players, the Jet Williams, the Ronnie Mauricios, the Drew Gilberts, guys like that, and you may feel good about how they catch the ball, you may feel good about how they hit the ball, you may even feel good about Diaz. Maybe Diaz, after a year back from surgery, is back to normal. Maybe they figured out the bullpen this year in a way that Phil Maton and Stanek and those guys couldn't, and maybe a better version of the bridge. But you may have a rotation that is a very good or good Sean Manaea and a lot of guys that you're not sure about. I mean, let's face it. Kodai Senga had shoulder issues. He's going to need to be stretched out where we think they're going to have six starters. Frankie Montas wasn't great with Milwaukee. I mean, he certainly has stuff. And everybody's got stuff. Everybody's got pitches that they could work with. I'm not going to get into detail about each one of them. We know. But they got stuff. They got something elite about their repertoire. I mean, Clay Holmes, we have no idea what he's going to be. He wasn't a good pitcher with the Pirates. Why would the Mets make something different here? I mean, he is a synopsis of this rotation. He's the ultimate riverboat gambler type of signing. Now, with him, at least there's a landing where you know you'll get a quality performance out of the pen. I mean, ultimately, if Clay Holmes was signed to be the second closer next to Diaz, I'd feel pretty good. Yeah, he was shaky at times with the Yankees, but he's a guy. I mean, he closed for the Yankees. The Yankees at times had championship aspirations around him. And, you know, you're putting him into the rotation. The worst case scenario is he lands in a spot that you know he could be successful with. Now, whether the rotation and all the work he does to get stretched out and anything that goes with becoming a viable back end to mid end of the rotation starter screws with what made him a great reliever, that we can't talk about. The real wild card, though, I mean, Manaea at this point, and I made this comparison over Beyond the Mic, what you could hope for is, look, you want to say he looked at Chris Sale back in July and mimicked his lower arm delivery fine. He ain't going to be Chris Sale. If the Mets found a way to get this guy at this point to get to the Chris Sale level, if that's the trajectory, if that's what they believe, they just got themselves a steal. Because, I mean, he was very good in the second half. But even with his very good second half from August 1st on, top 20 pitcher in baseball. You know who the best pitcher on the staff was the last 8 weeks of the season? It was David Peterson. I was amazed. When I went to FanGraphs and I saw this, I was amazed. I will list off from August 1st onward who had the best wins above replacement in all of baseball. It was number one, Zach Wheeler, no surprise. Number two, Blake Snell. You know he had a dominant second half, no surprise. Tarek Skubal of the Tigers, no surprise there. You saw how he pitched down the stretch. Gerrit Cole, Yankees, no surprise. You expect him there. Number five, David Peterson, ahead of Framber Valdez, ahead of Seth Lugo, who was competing for a Cy Young. ahead of Kikuchi, who got a nice contract this offseason. Ahead of Sean Manaea. Ahead of Michael Wacha, who pitched well for the Royals. Max Fried, who just got $27 million a year for 8 years from the Yankees. So there's this part of me that says, wow, the Mets have a really good rotation. And I'm sure smart guys and smart front office like David Stearns have way more information than I could even dream of. And I heard all the concerns. I mean, and as you go up and down the pundits, whether it's WFAN, SNY, MLB Network Radio, nobody's going to take a rotation of Manaea, Senga, Peterson, Montas, Clay Holmes, Griffin Canning, Blackburn, and McGill. That's your seven. And then you got your kids, the Sproat and the Tidwells of the world. And I'm sure there's other guys that we can put out there, you know, scrap heap guys, but we're not going to go that route right now. I'm sure you can, you know, no one's going to be fearful of those guys. Nobody's going to say it's better than the Phillies. Nobody's going to say it's better than the Yankees. I don't even know. I mean, the Braves don't have Charlie Morton back. I mean, I know they have Sale. They lost Fried. I'm not even sure that anybody will say that with Spencer Schwellenbach part of that rotation. I'm not sure anybody will say that they're better than the Braves. But it's an interesting rotation. And it's one, I mean, and I brought up 1999. If Manaea is your Al Leiter, who's your Oral Hershiser on there? Who's your Masato Yoshi? Is Montas your Rick Reed? Are Sproat and Tidwell potentially your Dotel? Is Senga kind of your... You know, I hate to say Yoshi because Senga has so much more upside, but and that's lazy because Japanese to Japanese. Is he your Yoshi? Is Blackburn your, you know, Bobby Jones? And maybe Peterson's your Dotel, you know, upside pitcher. I mean, Earl Hershiser's 40 years old, but, you know, he gave you 6 innings, 3 runs. I mean, that rotation was a lot of 6 innings, 3 runs. Not a lot of strikeouts out of it. Dotel, actually, when he came on, was so electric because he had stuff. And he wound up making a career out of the bullpen, but at that point when he came up, it was like, wow, he finally got someone who could get some swings and misses. Remember back then, when Armando Benitez was striking out 15 per 9, that was a big deal in 1999. Even though there was the steroid era, there wasn't that many strikeouts. The point is, there's not a perfect comparison between the two. Clearly, the 2025 Mets have some pitchers that are younger and have more upside than a 40-year-old Oral Hershiser or a 34-year-old Masato Yoshi. But in a lot of ways, it could land. Forget the names, forget the ages, forget all that. That was a rotation that was okay. It was okay. I mean, when you look at the pitching that year, the Mets were a below league average. Let's see, were they below league average? The Mets were, well, you know, as a staff, you know, they were top four. I mean, everybody gave up over 4 runs a game, but they were in a muck with, you know, other teams like the San Diego Padres, who weren't that great, and obviously the Reds, who were their equal. It wasn't, you know, an elite rotation. You know, that team was all about scoring runs, and that was what the league was about. The league was about scoring five. Whoever got to 5 or 6 runs first was going to win. So, you know, this rotation has more upside, but boy, you know, the Stearns has stayed away from Corbin Burns. Stearns stayed away from Max Fried. Stearns stayed away from Blake Snell. And I predicted that was going to happen, and I have no problems with that. I mean, when you look at Fried, at and this is a guy who is 100% supporting the 15 years to Juan Soto. No questions asked. I have no issues with giving Juan Soto the money he got. But when you look at $218 million for Max Fried with all the check engine light, and I know he's getting a lot of deferred money, but I hate $182 million for Blake Snell, who was, you know, the easy out of all the Padres pitchers that the Mets faced, he was the one that scared me the least in that wild card series, getting $182 million. And who knows what Corbin Burns is going to get. I could see Corbin Burns dragging into January. Now, do the Mets jump in? Is there another big pitching move? I don't see it. I think at this point, Sasaki and sitting back and waiting for Sasaki is their move. I think they could be opportunistic with minor league deals. I don't see where, and remember, already you have a rotation where everybody's got to make some kind of contribution. You can't send McGill down anymore. I think Peterson has an option. So if he has a bad spring, do you send him down? I guess you can. I mean, you can, no doubt. But I think he's past that. I mean, Blackburn's got to make the club. Canning's got to make the club. So he might make it as a result. And I haven't even included, who also doesn't have options, Jose Buto. So you forget about Buto, but he's in there. So you have quantity of pitching here. But you don't really have a de facto ace. You don't have Wheeler. You don't have Nola. I mean, you could argue that the Phillies' third best pitcher, Christopher Sanchez, would be potentially a Mets ace. That's a fair argument. Now, I think that I think Senga could be better than that, and I think Manaea could be better than that. I think the real, as you continue to look at what happened last year, and he wasn't bad against the Dodgers, but he wasn't great. The real wild card here is David Peterson. What David Peterson are you getting? He was huge. I mean, his performance, one of the biggest performances of 2024, was the day after Diaz lost that awful game in Arizona. And Peterson went out there and gave a quality start to get the ball to the bullpen, and then Diaz closed it out in Arizona. The double play he got late in the ball game, the way a tough Arizona lineup in Arizona on the road, just hours after a brutal loss. I mean, that was where, in a lot of ways, I mean, we talked about it back then. Everyone figured the season was going to go and take a bad left turn. And that's a team you were competing for the wild card. And by the way, that game could be pointed to as what won the Mets the wild card, not the game in Atlanta. They needed the game in Atlanta. But the fact that Arizona was sitting home seeing what the Braves and the Mets did instead of controlling their own fate, well, you could point to that game. And that was David Peterson. Fifth best pitcher in the second half from August 1st onward. So you could feel good about the Manaea signing. It's a great signing. There is so much to be excited about. But with the pitching, unlike a Soto, unlike if they go out and get a Bregman and an Alonso, I think there's a lot of upside here, but there's a floor that could scare you a little bit. And I wish I could tell you here on this Monday morning, a couple of days before Christmas, that Stearns and the Mets are sitting back waiting to be opportunistic with the big guy in the market with Burns. But I don't see that. I wish I could tell you after talking to Jim Allen a few weeks ago, and go back on the podcast to listen to the curious case of Roki Sasaki, that Sasaki will come in and be Hideo Nomo from 1995. I'm not sure that's possible. Look at Yamamoto and the transition he had with the Dodgers. Now, he was hurt, but even when he wasn't, he was learning. I mean, Senga, who is a 32-year-old, came here north of 30 to the States. Took him a couple of months. He adjusted rather well, rather quickly by all standards, but he was a veteran pitcher. He wasn't 10 years younger. I mean, this is a young kid coming in. And I'm excited about the possibility of the Mets winning that sweepstakes. It would show that whatever Joe Wolf, his agent, and Sasaki saw with the way that they're pitching, how they develop pitchers. And that's a big part of potentially why Holmes came here. He talked about it. Why Montas came here. I mean, right now, the money is going to be there everywhere. The Mets are not in a position, as you can see with the salaries, where they are overpaying for these starters. These guys are going to get paid. Manaea would have gotten that contract. With the salaries I stated to you earlier, Montas would have gotten that contract. Clay Holmes probably would have gotten a contract similarly to start somewhere else. And if not, he would have gotten it out of the bullpen. He could have gotten probably more money, maybe, to close, maybe not the same years, to close for maybe a bad team who would say, you know, we'll sign him as a closer and maybe we could trade him and get something for him. Now, it will be very interesting how the competition in spring training goes. And then the other question is, out of these arms, so let's say you go six arms. You got Manaea, Senga, Montas, Peterson, Holmes. Let's say all of them meet the bar in spring training. Your sixth starter, is that Buto? Is that McGill? Is that Blackburn? You're not going to go more than six starters. So let's say it's Blackburn. He has a resume. The Mets just traded a prospect capital for him at the deadline. So where does that leave Buto McGill? Now, obviously, the bullpen neither has options. You're going to need more starters. The problem here is Sproat and Tidwell are optionable. Those other two guys are not. So I also wonder, is there a trade in the works? You've heard Luis Castillo's name come up. That might be interesting because if I'm the Mets, now I don't think for Buto and McGill, those are headliners for Castillo. They're probably going to want one of the kids. I'm guessing that Jerry DePoto, if they actually are going to trade Luis Castillo, which there's rumors, but you know DePoto's played coy on that he's going to want some kind of offensive return. I think it was Buster Olney, and he's a piece of work. Buster Olney threw a Mark Vientos for Castillo deal. That doesn't help the Mets. I don't think Vientos is going to be a cleanup hitter. I think Vientos is going to wind up being like Teoscar Hernandez, maybe more of the mid to bottom part of the order. And that's a really good hitter. But I wouldn't right now trade him for a 32-year-old Luis Castillo. Not when I have an owner that's willing to spend. Because if you look at Castillo last year, he was very similar to Luis Severino, who you could have signed as a free agent. Now, I know the upside is much higher. So when I look at the tea leaves here, I see Sasaki out there. I see a number of arms that are not optionable. And if Peterson has a good spring, you know, he could go down, but I don't see that. So unless you believe McGill and Buto are bullpen bound and can come out of that bullpen, and I haven't even talked about Griffin Canning here. Now, I have talked to some people who feel with that slider, and if he works off the slider as his primary pitch, he could be a bullpen arm. He's got some bonus clauses in his contract for making 20-plus starts, so clearly that's where he wants to go. That's where he's going to make money. So maybe that's the guy that you could say, okay, he doesn't have to be optioned. You know, he's got a bullpen role. But with Buto and McGill, just makes me wonder. I mean, maybe they look at Peterson, they look at the big second half, the big last 8 weeks, and they say, hey, I don't believe that's who he is. You know, he's got, you know, they got a couple more years of control, but this is the best you're going to get out of him. Let's sell high. Let's do what Sandy Alderson didn't do with Dom Smith after the pandemic season. Sell high. Maybe that's a possibility. So I'm not convinced that the Mets are done here with the rotation. Clearly Sasaki's in play. They haven't been coy about that. But forget Sasaki for a second, because he could also be a bit of a project. I know that nobody wants to hear that, but we're not sure what you're getting there. You know you're getting a talented pitcher, but he's not the finished product of a Senga. You know, he's not like Imanaga in Chicago, who's going to come here. You could get much more upside than those guys, but you don't know when that's going to happen. I think because you're looking at, I don't see Buto as a bullpen arm unless there's some kind of spring training. As spring training goes on, you develop him to compete for rotation spot, and then you say, okay, you're not going to be in the rotation, and then you commit to the bullpen for him. But once you commit to the bullpen for him and McGill, not having the minor leagues as a stretching out option, those are two depth options that go by the wayside. And then if you got Canning in the bullpen, and I can't see all three being in the bullpen, I mean, something's got to give. There is going to be a trade. I could see them trading some of the current arms, the Buto and the McGill, maybe Peterson, and going out and signing some depth. You know, maybe Canning becomes their Trevor Williams of this year, swing guy. You can, depending on how he adjusts to the role, you know, Buto was very Seth Lugo-ish. You needed a couple of days off. So when he came in, you wanted to stretch him a couple innings. You wanted to maximize every outing that he had. And if he was off, then you just basically burnt him and you were down a pitcher for a couple of days. So he comes with complexities. I mean, Reed Garrett has options. you know, if he has a if he struggles this spring, you know, maybe that opens up early on for the Mets to see what they have. It'll be interesting. I mean, Daniel Nunez, maybe he's not completely healthy. I mean, there is guys that, and again, my point is you could bring all these guys north instead of losing them, because you're not going to expose these guys to waivers and keep them, the McGills and the Blackburns of the world. They're gone. These guys are gone if they don't make the club. So I think something's up. So the Manaea signing, good signing by Stearns. I don't think they're done. I think the rotation is interesting. It's not going to be the 2015 rotation. I think it'll be better than the 99. I know I brought the 99. It just came to mind because of the whole Ricky Henderson talk, and away you go. So that's where they're at. Where do I see the rest of the hot stove going? I don't know, and I know it's easy to say, well, Stearns and Cohen and Boris are cooking here with Manaea, so why not Pete? Pete's market is shrinking. I still think Boris is going to try to get another team in on this, even if it's at a low AAV, to create some competition for the Mets. I cannot see Pete signing for a four-year contract for $100 million or $125 million without an opt-out. I think what ultimately will go down with Pete Alonso is he will sign a deal that he probably doesn't like, that he probably didn't need Boris to get, but he's going to have an opt-out, and an opt-out that's more in his favor, maybe. And he's going to have to go out, figure out why he's not hitting the off-speed pitch, what were his issues at runners in scoring position. Now with Soto in the lineup, does he protect Soto? Does Soto protect him? Does he... Because Soto probably doesn't need... Soto doesn't need protection. He didn't need Aaron Judge. Helped him not get as many intentional walks. He didn't need Aaron Judge. But does Pete become a better hitter if Soto's behind him? Because who would you rather face? You want to throw a fastball to Pete and try to jam him? Does he develop some patience? Does being around Soto, watching how he goes about his craft, help him develop some of that patience that we know and we've seen glimpses of, where he doesn't get himself in bad counts and then becomes susceptible to the off-speed pitches? Does that help? And then does he go back out? Let's say he has a 45 home run, 130 RBI a year in 2025 with Soto. Mets go deep in the playoffs, will maybe win a championship. Let's think big. And then he could go back out on the market. Now, Vlad Guerrero might be on that market. And I guess that's the other thing. Are the Mets looking at Vlad Guerrero maybe doing something big and saying, hey, I find it hard to believe, and Guerrero's body would concern me more than Soto's, that the Mets are going to invest prospect capital, bring a guy in that's going to require, you know, maybe not $55 million a year, but not that far off. I mean, when Soto set the standard, and Soto's better than Vlad, but Vlad is going to want 10, 12 years, $500 million. That's a lot of, you know, it's $90 million, $100 million for two players, albeit two very elite offensive players. One top 10 all time right now. The other one very good with potential. I don't know. I think Pete Alonso's not Vlad Guerrero, but he's not chopped liver, and I think he's more in the context of building a payroll around Soto. He's a better value, personally. And we'll see. So that's where I see Pete Alonso going. And I think it'll be with the Mets. I've always felt he's going to come back from the Mets. I certainly, and we've talked about this before, and it was talked about over on X over the weekend. It would have been interesting if the drop, and I said this a couple of times, if the drop pop-up led to the Brewers blowing out that game three and the Mets losing, or Pete hitting into a double play or striking out against Devin Williams instead of hitting that big home run, what would we be talking about this offseason? I think he'd still be an option, but I think that the love for Pete and the demands of Pete being re-signed would not be as loud. And, you know, you may see a component, a proposal to have more of a component-driven first baseman and maybe go big more for Bregman. Again, I'm going to tell you what I said a couple of weeks ago. If you have to choose between Bregman and Pete Alonso, I pick Pete Alonso. Just like with Manaea, bringing back guys who are part of this fabric of this special team, this special clubhouse, you can't bring them all back. nor do you want to. You have to, talent wins. Vibes only take you so far. But to rip apart in a big way some of the key contributors, I don't think is smart either. So bringing Pete back, bringing Minaya back. And look, if you want to still go after Bregman, I'm a little bit cautious about Correa. I know that that sounds weird just a couple of years after advocating for the Mets to take a risk there. That's a different situation. I'm not going to get into that today. At least with Pete, you know who he is. He hits the ball hard. Bregman had some very concerning declines offensively. And he just go with what you know instead of who you don't. And the last thing you want to do is bring someone in and have another Anthony Rendon or Sandoval. Remember Sandoval from the Giants many years ago when the Red Sox signed him. So the Panda. You want to go with who you know. And I think Pete's going to have a very good contract that at this point with his market string, I think the Mets could sign a very good contract. I think there'll be an opt-out, but I think it'll be a good contract. All right, last thing before we wrap up, and we'll take a couple of days off for the holidays here. I'll be back with a Beyond the Mic later in the week. Now, if Pete signs, all bets are off. Now, my luck, Pete will sign Christmas Eve in the middle of Christmas Eve dinner. And I would be very happy, but I don't know if I could come to you with an emergency podcast on Christmas Eve. We'll see. At this time of the year, we did it last year, and I will be announcing that on Christmas Eve at some point. We'll do it on a video. You'll be the first to hear it here, those who are loyal listeners to the Talking Mets podcast. So when I created Beyond the Mic last year, the premium content portion of the show, I did something that I've done in the past. I did it in my old NY Baseball Digest days and stole it from Time Magazine, and I do the Mets Person of the Year. Now, similar to Time Magazine, the Person of the Year is not always a person. It's an event. It's a person, good or bad, that has impact on the season, on the year, Mets year. And that's a calendar year. That's not just the 2024 season. So the offseason of this year counts. Even leading into the offseason of last year counts because you're doing it as of the 31st of the year. So last year, Billy Epler, I put the vote out there. I think Billy Epler won it because I chose him. I'm not sure you guys chose him. I'd have to go back and see what, and that's where when I make my announcement, I'll get more depth. But Billy Epler, why did Billy Epler win it? Why? Because he got fired? No, because at the deadline, and maybe we should give Steve Cohen the credit because he has the checkbook, he went out there, he took Justin Verlander, and he took Max Scherzer, and he was able to turn them into some good prospect capital. Luis Angel Cunha, Drew Gilbert, Ryan Clifford, who may actually go out, and if they don't contribute to the Mets, may be part of a big deal for a Luis Castillo. So that's the gift that, despite the fact that Epler's been gone for well over a year, that keeps on giving. So Billy Epler was the first annual Talking Mets Person of the Year. Billy Epler specifically for the trades of Max Scherzer and Justin Verlander. So you got to attach it to an event sometimes, not just a person. It's not, oh, Billy Epler because he was the GM of the Mets. No, it's Billy Epler because of that deal. That's how Time Magazine works. That's how their Person of the Year works. Now, this year, and what it will work as follows. We will put it out there. There'll be a vote on X. I'll also see if I could put a poll up. I know I could put a poll up, I think, on the Substack. I'll combine the two polls. Now, maybe there's some duplication where somebody votes on X and votes on the Substack, and it'll be from Christmas Eve till New Year's Eve. So you got about a week. And I'll announce it on New Year's Day, who won. Now, I want it now, the vote, to be fair, this is my show. And very rarely, I'm trying to be egalitarian here, but I am not just going to go because this is not the Electoral College or the popular vote. Just because you guys want to see X and I want Y, X wins. No, this is my show. I'll take your opinion because I want to hear what you have to say. And it will factor into my final decision. And it'll lead to some conversation. But if I say it's X and you say it's Y, X is going to win. That's, I mean, you want to call me a dictator, so be it, but that's the way it goes. But you know what? I think those who listen to this show and those that I speak to frequently that are good, loyal listeners to the show, I think the thing that makes this fun is that we we debate and we disagree, but the foundation of our belief system about the Mets and how the Mets go about things is generally within a bandwidth where we're not too far off. So I think that we won't be as far off as that scenario played out. So anyway, what are the four? And I usually limit to four events and people that are the nominees for the 2024 Mets Person of the Year. It is Francisco Lindor for his near MVP season. You guys remember the home run against the Phillies. You guys remember the home run against the Braves. You guys remember the turnaround on offense and the team when he went into the leadoff spot. This is a big one. This might be the favorite out of the gate. Francisco Lindor for his near MVP season. Should have won a gold glove, didn't, but that's number one. Number two, more recent, Steve Cohen signing Juan Soto to a record deal. That's this year. It was done in the calendar year of 24, so that's part of it. See, this is where the Lindor and the Soto signing, these are close. See, this year's a little bit harder. I thought last year, and I don't, again, the Billy Epler thing rankled some people, but I thought it was pretty obvious that those deals were in a miserable season. Perhaps the, big story of the year. I think Lindor was a nominee last year for his 30-30 season. Number three, Pete Alonso's home run off of Devin Williams. Another tough one. Another, easily event that you can say is the event, because without Pete's home run, there's no Philly series, there's no Dodgers series. It's still a really good season, but we may be talking a few different things. You may not have the same love for the season without that home run. And then the last, and this normally in a normal season would be maybe a favorite. I think this is more of a long shot. But Mark Vientos' breakout season, the home runs against the Cardinals, the walk-off, the home run against the Reds, the walk-off, how he seamlessly put himself in the middle of the lineup. And really, with a down year from Pete Alonso and a down second half from J.D. Martinez, Mark Vientos was huge. So his breakout season is the fourth. So Francisco Lindor for his near MVP season, Steve Cohen's signing of Juan Soto to a record deal, Pete Alonso's home run off of Devin Williams, and Mark Vientos' breakout season. Those are the nominees. Go and look at X in the next 24 hours. It'll be out sometime on Christmas Eve, tomorrow. The voting, it'll be pinned on at Talking Mets No G on my X account. I'll also try, again, on the Substack, it'll either link to the X poll or there'll be another poll if you want to vote on Substack, and away you go. So that's that. I hope you enjoyed today's show. Sorry it came to you late. It was very fortuitous that it came to us late. It gave us the best content. I wouldn't have to do an emergency show and say, oh, by the way, delete the late Sunday night show. So what's going to be? Obviously, Christmas and New Year coming up. They're in the middle of the week, so it makes it not quite a break, because sometimes we take a break, but we'll take a couple of days off. We'll see what free agency leads to. Be on the lookout at Beyond the Mic. I've been saying for a while I owe you some analysis of some of these value signings, working on that. I'm way late on that, but that's because there's been so much great other news coming out. Away you go. Will we see more pitching? I don't think the Mets are going to be out there signing a Walker Buehler, another big arm in the rotation. I think that's it for the pitching. I think you're going to see value in Sasaki, but we'll see. So I don't expect that. I mean, obviously Bregman and Pete Alonso, those are our signings that may come down. Maybe we'll be coming with an emergency podcast to do that. And, just keep coming to TalkingMetsPodcast.com. No G. And away you go. The off season, I mean, we're what, about 90 or so days to opening day. It doesn't feel it. It's like 18 degrees outside, at least here out on Eastern Long Island. It's about as cold as it's been all year. The furthest thing from your mind is baseball. You're probably thinking NFL playoffs and the hockey and all that stuff, NBA. But here at Talking Mets Podcast, we're 24/7, 365 baseball. It's opening day every day here. So anyway. All right, that's it. I want everybody to have a great holiday, have a great Christmas, have a great New Year, have a great Hanukkah, whatever you celebrate. I'm sure we'll talk before New Year, but you can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You can get me on X at TalkingMetsNoG and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. No G. Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You can get me on Instagram, TalkingMetsNoG. And I'd love for you to subscribe to the newsletter, premium content, substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And I want to thank the good folks at the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Enjoy the rest of your Monday. Enjoy your Christmas. We'll be back with another Talking Mets podcast later this week. Till then, take care, everybody.